Hi, this is Christopher Atkins. I'm totally naked. Please watch and listen to the Pop Culture Preservation Society. It is a lot of fun. Wink, wink.
You're so awesome.
Hi, listeners. It's encore time. For those new to the class, that means that for the next month, while we are busy researching and writing and recording most of our next season, we're replaying some of our old episodes that, for one reason or another, are relevant right now or that are just conversations we love. And we'll be adding brand new introductory conversations. So even if you caught the episode the first time out of the gate, you should listen again because we'll be adding to the conversation, enhancing it, if you will, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to the best Audible right now. It's Henry Winkler's memoir, Being Henry, The Fonz and Beyond. Have either of you read it or listened to it yet?
No, but it's on my list and I'm definitely going to listen. I'm not an audiobook person in general, but when it comes to a celebrity biography, yeah. I'm going to listen to the celebrity biography read by the celebrity.
Oh,
so I'm
always.
Very excited always. For this
exactly.
one.
Exactly, exactly.
Yes, I love it. You guys, I highly, highly recommend listening to this one. And I know more of you than Kristen are not audiobook people, but hearing him tell his story, and notice I didn't say read it, because it's honestly like you are sitting with him, listening to him, just talk to you and tell you about these incredible things and moments in his life. It's next level. It is so captivating. He is so captivating. He's beyond lovely and engaging. I love this man.
And people always talk about Henry Winkler as the nicest guy in Hollywood. That's kind of who he's become known as. I don't think that we knew that when he was Fonzie. But now after Arrested Development and Barry, and he's got a whole line of children's books that like 100 children. That's not right. 25 children's books. I don't know. He's got a lot. He's got a lot of children's books. People are identifying him as one of the nicest people in Hollywood.
Wow. What a great reputation to have, right?
Isn't that nice?
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Well, I'm only about halfway through listening to it, but you guys, each time I listen, I'm not kidding. I find myself like leaning forward just a little bit and whatever I'm doing, like yesterday I was emptying the dishwasher. I realize I have like this little grin on my face the whole time I'm listening to him. And if you need proof, just go on Audible right now and listen to just the sample, the preview. It's like 4 minutes, which is the very beginning where he briefly tells you the story of his Fonzie audition. It's hilarious. It's amazing. The first, 20 minutes of the book, he's very transparent about how he didn't realize he had dyslexia till he was 34. This is 5 years after Happy Days started. And, he couldn't read scripts for auditions. So he would just go in and wing it. He would make up his own stuff because he couldn't have read. But his parents, you guys, they called him dumb all the time. Oh, he flunked out of every grade.
Ouch.
And he's so transparent about this. But I wanted to let you know that one of the most amazing things, I learned this, and I could be wrong because this was several years ago, but he publishes his children's books in that font that's for dyslexic kids. There's a special font that makes it easier for them to read, which
it's
I think
is actually
amazing.
Printed. The books are printed. You can in an ebook you can choose your font, but none of them are printed in that font. So that's kudos to him. And I think that's one reason he's been so successful, because who else is catering to the millions of people with dyslexia? He's the only one. He's it. Sorry if there's a person out there who's doing it and I don't know you. But Henry Winkler sort of cornered the market on that. I think this is an important discussion for us to have at this moment too, because it's, The Fonz and Beyond is the subtitle. And the three of us just had a 20-minute conversation that we really should have recorded, which was sort of a confessional about the struggles that we're having with aging, particularly in the vanity department. What things bother you? What things don't? What should we worry about? What can you do? What is going too far? Everybody's line is in a different place. And we were all talking about the need for a role model. We don't want to look, quote unquote, good for our age. That's not what we want. We want to look healthy, robust, happy. That's what we want to be. And who is that role model that comes complete with the age-appropriate signs like wrinkles or graying hair or, the jowls are a little saggy or whatever? Henry Winkler is that person. And there's not a single person who looks at Henry Winkler and says, oh, God, but look, he doesn't look like Fonzie anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Not one person says that. We adore him and we think fondly about who he was previously. And we look at him now and think those same fond thoughts. And he's more successful now than he ever was. Fonzie was a cultural touchstone, but I would argue that the roles that he's getting now, to be an actor and get those roles and to be so successful, what is he, 74?
Oh, yeah. I just looked it up and something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say that is that's a testament to what is to come and that he clearly is not worried about his double chin or his gray hair. He is not worried about that. And we shouldn't be either.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago, or maybe just last year, I can't really remember when, but he was on a fishing trip and he would post a picture every time he caught a fish. And I remember looking at those pictures and thinking, that is happiness. He just exuded it. And I will never forget those moments of thinking that's what I want. And so in reference to what you were saying, Kristen, yes, I mean, he is living that life and he exudes it. He exudes happiness and joy. And at the end of the day, I guess that is what I want to do.
So how do you want to look? You want to look happy.
Yeah. And if you listen to him read this book, he's gleeful in parts.
Gleeful.
He's so funny. I tell you, I love a good, celebrity memoir read by the celebrity as well. But this one is already top of my list.
Wow.
I love it. I adore him. You adore him. And like, you know, Kristen said, I mean, there is a reason everyone in Hollywood does too, right?
Yes.
I recently found a People magazine, you know, one of those special editions they have that are like, you grab at the checkout and then you realize, oh, wait, that was $15.
Yeah.
Wait,
what?
Although
I
think of it like
it.
A book. I think of it like a paperback book.
But it's deceptive. Let's face it. I'm
it
not
really
a fan.
It really is. Yeah.
And they're always impulse decisions. 100% of the time, it's an impulse decision.
You expect it to be $4.99 or even my old 1970s, 80s self expects it to be $1.99 and then it's $5.99. But then when it's $12.99.
Yeah. So anyway, but I found one devoted to Happy Days. Did you guys realize that on January 15th of this year that we just passed, it celebrated its 50th? Happy Days premiered January 15th, 1974. Anyway, as someone who was addicted to Happy Days as a kid, and I know I'm speaking for you too as well, and many of our listeners, I highly recommend this special Happy Days issue. Well worth the $15 if you can still find it.
That 50th anniversary kind of came and went with a whisper. You would think that would be, there'd be a big special or something like that. I don't know. Do we have specials anymore? Maybe that's why.
Dun, 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 dun. I can't recreate it with my voice, but I can hear the da, da, you know, the thing at the end.
Well, I think you have to be 90 or something now to get any kind of special. Like Carol Burnett had her special.
Yeah, On Your Way Out.
Yes. And who just had theirs?
Dick Van Dyke.
Yes, Dick Van Dyke's.
Yeah. Well, today, listeners, we're bringing you an encore of one of our two episodes devoted to Happy Days. This one is just an iconic episode. Fonzie loves Pinky, correct? You guys, it's one of our favorites.
Probably my favorite episode of any TV show ever.
Listeners, if you haven't listened to this, that this enthusiasm is about to come through. Kristen loves this episode because she loves Pinky.
But there's also some very highbrow discussion in this episode.
Oh, this is book club for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is another dissertation. We break it all down for
take
you,
you to
guys.
Church.
We take you to church. We examine Fonzie's growth through this two-part episode.
Yes.
We had such a fun conversation and we think you're going to love it. So enjoy this replay of episode 83.
Did you know that the Pop Culture Preservation Society is on Patreon? Patreon allows you to support our work by becoming dues-paying members of our society. We are an independent, women-run endeavor with a commitment to delivering the highest quality listening experience to our community. And so we've taught ourselves how to record, edit, and produce a podcast in midlife, a time when most of us are asking our kids how to regram a TikTok, so that we can deliver episodes that truly speak to you. Support from PCPS patrons means that we can devote more of our time and resources to the content, sources, equipment, software, hosting, and research that you've come to depend on, without worrying about how to pay the bills. So thank you. We appreciate you from the bottom of our bell-bottomed hearts. And this is when a nun rolls Pinky down the hall in a wheelchair, and she has like a pink sweatband on her head, Bjorn Borg style, which is supposed to be some kind of Band-Aid.
Hello. hello world is a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome back to our continuing discussion of Happy Days from our last episode, in which we discussed the characters, the actors, the episodes, and the legacy of Happy Days. But no discussion of Happy Days would ever be complete without talking about Pinky Tuscadero. Pinky Tuscadero was our Sandy before there was a Sandy. And I'm talking about Carnival Sandy, not Rydell High Sandy, because do not lie, we all loved Carnival Sandy. I love Carnival Sandy. Probably for the same reasons that we loved Pinky Tuscadero. Pinky was badass, and she was the only woman to ever fully capture Fonzie's heart.
You could tell in this episode, he had probably the most genuine smiles. We'll talk about it a little bit as it goes on, but that he did in any episode. I was like, I wanted to freeze the screen and just stare at his ear-to-ear, authentic smile. I loved it.
I believed this relationship. I believed
I did
it.
Too, 100%.
Well, as we'll find out, that's good acting, right?
Yeah, that was only acting.
Yes, that's right.
I totally agree. No wonder we still remember it, and we'll talk about that in a minute. So anyway, we met Pinky Tuscadero on September 21st, 1976, in a Blockbuster season opener called Fonzie Loves Pinky, and the network started promoting her arrival in earnest long before the episodes aired, like in the summertime. We watched it all summer, so that we were absolutely beside ourselves by the time Tuesday night came. Fonzie has a girlfriend, and it's not some ninny in saddle shoes who comes running every time he snaps his fingers.
Yeah, she's independent, right? And she's, in my mind, she's the female Fonzie.
Like, she is.
Oh, definitely.
That's exactly right.
She's tough, and she's got an edge to her.
She was the epitome of cool. And like you just said, a female Fonzie. And she made Fonzie different, in my opinion, because as I rewatched this episode, I could really see a transition in Fonzie's character. Again, that smile that he had, just the way his face lit up, literally, when she was in the room. It was so genuine. It was so authentic.
Well, and he's like met his match. You know how they always say when you know you're in love and like your arguing's different, he's almost, as we'll talk about in a minute as we go through the episode in more detail, he definitely has his moments of anger and of forgiveness and all of this, all of these emotions are going through, but you can tell that it's almost like she makes him, I don't want to say a better person, but she makes him more aware of himself than any of the other girls we've seen him with so far.
He rises to the challenge of Pinky Tuscadero, essentially. Right?
She challenges him. He's never had anybody challenge him before. Yeah. And that,
right. It was just the ninnies that came running. Snap your fingers and they come running. That was his shtick. And that was why we thought we liked Fonzie. But then Pinky Tuscadero comes along and we like this new Fonzie. It was very confusing.
Yes.
I was all in for Pinky Tuscadero because of the snap.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, and I couldn't stop doing it. I was like Joni in this episode. Oh, yeah. You know, Joni can't stop doing it. I don't
even
think
Marion
in 1976.
Does it.
Yeah. In 1976, I wasn't getting this whole nuances of like, wow, she's making Fonzie a better person, or wow, she's really making Fonzie take a real, you know, introspective look at himself. In me, it was like, oh my God, look how cute her little top is tied up. I love her boots and I love her snap.
The boots.
Yeah.
I don't even think I was going into the whole like, and she's so independent and tough and stands up for herself. It was all about the boots and the snap for me.
But you do, even if you don't realize it, you are perceiving that even at 7 years old. You like her for a reason. Maybe you can only say it's the snaps, and you can only say that it's the outfit. I was going to say the uniform, the Pinky Tuscadero uniform.
Well, kind of. It was like, you know, Fonzie's leather jacket. It was her boots and scarf.
And her hot pants.
His AA with the thumbs and her snapping.
And her snapping. And she had those tiny little shorts on that were like Dallas Cowboys cheerleader shorts. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but she was slamming. I mean, that outfit was, to say it was body skimming is an understatement. And yet it didn't really reveal anything.
But
no, it's tied up real high. Like it's tied that top is tied high. Up super high. Like she could not have been a big chested woman and worn that right. top like that because it was tied up real high. But she's, to me, it looked like exactly like her outfit, uniform, whatever you want to call it, is like the Polly Pocket clothes that you just snap on. Yes. They're so tiny that you can barely even get your fingers to maneuver to snap it on her little torso.
But I do believe that was one reason we couldn't look away. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say that it's more than she was, it's not that she was being objectified. She was being objectified. However, she wasn't being overtly objectified because she brought to that outfit the attitude of right. Pinky Tuscadero. And so the boots and the snaps and the scarf and the outfit and the attitude made this package that made us unable to look away from the TV.
Right.
We could not look away. And we know this all about Pinky from the ads on TV. We don't even have to wait for the episode. The episode had not aired, and we knew everything that we needed to know about Pinky, and we knew that this episode would be different. So Pinky Tuscadero was like a cultural moment. She is an icon for anyone who had a TV in 1976. If you say Pinky to someone over 50, we all immediately go, Pinky Tuscadero. Those yep. two words yeah. go together. And yet, she only appeared in three episodes. Actually, it's just two episodes. It's one hour-long episode, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then it's a to be continued. And we had to wait a whole week to see the conclusion in the third episode. It would be like, I mean, it's just stunning to me that we have this attachment and these memories to something from three episodes of a sitcom. And I keep thinking it would be, the equivalent would be like our kids saying, remember when Jimmy Smits was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine? I mean, can you think of anything that our kids could hold on to like that in that short period of time?
I was really surprised when we started talking about this episode and that we were going to kind of do this deep dive on the Pinky Tuscadero episode. When you kept talking about it, in my mind, I was sort of like, well, which one? Well, which Pinky right. episode? Because in my memory, she's on for much longer. And to find out that it's just this one very memorable one, but I was really surprised to see that it was like, whoa, she was a flash in the pan.
Well, and I think that classic 70s to be continued,
To be continued.
That left, we had a whole week to think about that show. And when I think about other TV shows too, like there's a Starsky and Hutch that I've talked about that was to be continued. And I stayed home from Saturday Night Mass. My parents let me stay home so I could watch the conclusion. And a lot of the episodes of TV shows that left us hanging, I think those left a bigger memory because we had a whole week of just it simmering in our mind and thinking what could happen. And for me in this episode, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, was I thought she maybe was going to die. I mean, that, mm-hmm. there was that aspect of it too. So yeah, I think that whole anticipatory feel that we get from
I
these to be
right.
continued leave yes. A more permanent marker in our minds.
We had to wait, and we talked about it for
right.
7 days.
Right.
Just waiting to find out about the conclusion. Because I keep asking myself, how did ABC create an icon in just three episodes?
Well, I think one huge reason is because Fonzie was such an icon. She became an icon just by association with Fonzie. But mm-hmm. I also think that she was unlike any other female character on TV then, especially when we frame it like she's so different from what we expect from a 1950s love interest.
Right.
So it was such like almost like a 180 of what we'd seen on that show that's one reason she became unforgettable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of opposites that were going on here because our idea of Fonzie was all of the girls, three girls in every show, the Pulaski twins, you know, a double date, three dates in one night. And then here we have the opposite. One woman. And it becomes indelible.
He found her. I mean, I probably didn't then, but there probably was part of me that felt sorry for him that he never had the relationship with anyone, you know, except for Richie's friends and Richie. It was like he just didn't have any permanence. And it was always kind of sad that he didn't have somebody that he could. A female interest. Really, he didn't have a romantic interest at all. And we had grown to love him so much. We wanted him to be happy. And he's not going to be happy unless he meets someone that can you know, call bullshit on him sometimes.
And that can make him smile in that way that you described, Karen.
Yep.
Right? Because the Pulaski twins did not make him smile like that. They just made him feel powerful.
Right.
And we knew it was all about necking. Right? When he's got the three dates in one night, we know that it's not, those girls don't make him smile. They're just necking. I didn't think they were having sex. I thought they were necking.
In this, I mean, I've at one point today, I thought, did we ever see anyone like doing the walk of shame down the, you know, those garage apartment steps? Was that ever insinuated or was it always the necking? I always thought it was the necking too, but then I thought, did it just go over my head?
Oh, that's so, so emphatic. And now I'm thinking maybe it could be over my head.
In this episode though, there was a lot of kind of.
Oh yeah. That's what made me think about
it. Sleep together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Which maybe we hadn't really seen before. Well, and of course that.
Oh, it went right over my head at the time, though.
Mm-hmm. But even think about it. So we have the ads that are leading up to these three episodes, and they were on a cover of Dynamite in a big heart, right? So it's like cementing. They're cementing the whole relationship in our minds before it even happens. I mean, the marketing of this was so brilliant, and here we are today talking about it 45 years later.
That Dynamite cover makes you think that they had a more permanent idea in mind for this character than maybe what actually came to be.
I know, because they certainly invested in it, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
And we will talk about that later. TV Guide, so it's not just us. TV Guide ranked this episode number 87 on its list of the 100 greatest episodes on TV in history.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if they're talking about quality.
I was just about to say, that can't have anything to do with the,
the quality. Okay, so why just three episodes? If Pinky was such a huge fan favorite, why did they write her off the show? It was very clear, very early, that Roz Kelly, the actress who played Pinky, was not really fitting in with the cast all that well. And in most cases, people writing about it in the media would go even further and say things like, discord erupted between Roz and the cast and even the producers. It was bad news. And she has said, Roz Kelly has said, I hear that some people call me abrasive. I'm just myself. Sure, I talk loud once in a while, but that doesn't mean people can chew me up and spit me out. So I think she had quite a chip on her shoulder coming to this very intact cast. And she may have rubbed them the wrong way. You can already tell from that statement that she's abrasive. She says she's abrasive, and she says it in a very abrasive way. But she teased people, and they bristled around her, especially when she called Ron Howard Opie, because he clearly did not like it. He asked her to stop, and she wouldn't. I mean, you can see people who do things like this, right? They think everything is funny, even though you're like, it's not funny for me. Will you please stop?
Right.
Right.
And so, and Opie kind of
Ron Howard is so nice. I mean, my whole thing when I was reading that was, oh my gosh, some of the nicest people in Hollywood are on this set. And so for you to have not been able to gel with them, you must have really been a piece of work.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That, I mean, Henry Winkler, nicest guy in Hollywood.
Right.
Ron Howard, nicest guy in Hollywood. It really sounds, and they're saying that even today, 45 years later, it really does sound like they were the wholesome and loving cast that they purported themselves to be. At one point, Roz Kelly gave an interview in which she said, and this is like during the filming or during the broadcast of it, I grew up on welfare, so I don't relate to rich kids. And she was referring specifically to Henry Winkler. She was not a fan of his, and it was mutual.
Why did they cast her to begin with?
Isn't that crazy?
When I read that, though, I felt like that was so interesting because that did not come across. Like, they had a lot of chemistry in these episodes.
Was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, you keep saying, Carolyn, that his smile was so genuine. He was so genuinely in love with Pinky Tuscadero. And we're like, maybe not. Maybe
he's is some real acting.
Really good actor.
Yeah.
Their chemistry, Fonzie and Pinky, was magic. Okay, so here are some things to think about, too. This was a very risky move for the writers and the producers because Fonzie was the most popular person on TV. End of story. The number one most popular person on TV. That is quite a burden to bear. So were they messing with the formula? Was it a good idea to completely change one part of this very popular persona to a lovable, romantic, one-woman man and allow him to share the spotlight? And I have to wonder if they like second-guessed themselves and then thought, never mind.
Well, I think she made it easy for them to second guess themselves.
Yeah.
I think they had one plan going into this, which I think is a terrible plan, only two seasons into a show. As much as, you know, all of these shows, the formula is the whole, sometimes there's a whole will they or won't they, will they, you know, like, right. Let's go like Ross and Rachel or something. And then they put them together. You want nothing more than for them to get together. But then once they're together, all they do is break them up. Because they realize
the cat and mouse.
Oh, this was bad. We needed to wait till the very end. So my thought is that they had this great idea for publicity. Not that they really needed it in 1976, but they were going to put him with one person. And then it turned out to be just kind of hellfire on set. And then they quickly realized, oh yeah, let's just go back to the way it was. It's fine.
That's a really good point, because usually they don't bring somebody in and have it be an immediate connection. They bring someone in, they tease it out, and it's the will they, won't they, cat and mouse. No, she arrives and boom, they are a couple and we are all in.
Well, and there's some little backstory, right, that they've known each other before. Yep. But man, right away, there's no more like, oh, this is awkward. Oh my gosh, I feel some tension. It's just boom right away.
It is boom within the first 5 minutes.
I'm going to play a little devil's advocate and say, I don't think it was that off script or crazy for them to do this. I do think that they did have an intention, kind of like what you're saying, of this cat and mouse story that was going to happen. She was going to go off and do her thing, but she was going to come back every once in a while. And they were maybe, you know, that
for
relationship. Right. And also, this was the first kind of time that we got to see this side of Fonzie. You know, we almost had to have a romantic kind of interest to show this softer side. And I think that perhaps that was how the writers and the producers thought that they could get us to see that Fonzie wasn't all, that there was a deeper part to him. That's my theory.
This was their vehicle for expanding his character.
It was. Because, you know, I mean, he had a hard time making commitment because his you know, father left him and he's got a lot he's got to work through. And so
I love the narrative that Carolyn makes up.
It keeps going.
I think Carolyn writes for WikiFan.
Right. It's very deep. So I think it was very planned. And had she not been as evidently bitchy as she was, sorry, Roz, but if you hadn't caused the ruckus,
let's just
you had
call
caused
it like we see it.
Yeah. That okay, you would have weird. Had a, you would have had an ongoing character in that show, maybe not every single episode, but you would have come back at the holidays and ratings week and we would have seen that deeper side of Fonzie.
And they would have promoted it just like they did that summer and we would be, and there we'd be 30 million viewers again every time. Okay, so let's get a little bit into who Roz Kelly was. It's not a super long story because she was most notably Pinky Tuscadero. That's the majority of the story right there. But she was born Rosalind Schwartz in July of 1943 or 42, depending on what you read, which this is just kind of weird, you guys, because that means that Pinky Tuscadero was the same age as my dad.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that kind of weird?
Yeah.
Like when I was watching Pinky.
When was she born? 1942?
1943 or 1942.
Oh, my mom is in 1943.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's 41.
So do you like equate your mom and Pinky Tuscadero? I mean, they're just not even from the same planet. Oh, I guess I should speak for my own mother. My mother would be happy to hear that she's not at all like Pinky Tuscadero. She would be
right.
Like, well, thank
God. She did not aspire to that.
That she did not. So one of Roz Kelly's very first appearances is as Barbara Streisand's friend in the 1970 movie The Owl and the Pussycat. She does some more small parts in films, and then she guest stars on Starsky and Hutch a few times. She teams up with David Soul when Paul Michael Glazer, a.k.a. Starsky, threatened to quit during a contract dispute. And the plan was that they were going to replace Starsky with Pinky Tuscadero, which I can't – it just makes my mind explode. But then – Paul Michael Glazer resolved his contract dispute and Pinky was out. So the three episodes of Happy Days solidified her as a name, so much so that she appeared on other shows in character as Pinky Tuscadero, even after she was booted from Happy Days. It's mostly like variety shows and things like that. But it's sort of like I can't even think of a good example. Who just comes as their character? Flip Wilson? I don't know. She wasn't Roz Kelly. She was Pinky. So part of that is because we were so attached to the character of Pinky. But ABC perpetuated it because when they booted her, they created a spinoff that featured Pinky Tuscadero 20 years later. So that would have been current day, 1976. It's Pinky Tuscadero in 1976 called Blansky's Beauties. It starred Nancy Walker, who is Ida Morgenstern, as a kind of house mother to a bunch of Las Vegas showgirls, one of whom is Pinky Tuscadero. So I guess like the motorcycle thing didn't work out.
that is not in character for Pinky Tuscadero to become a showgirl.
And is really, so that would be like her retirement job. Like she retired from motorcycle demonstrations and demolition derby driving.
Well, maybe she has a motorcycle show and she like rides it on like a high wire, but in showgirl attire. And then Carolyn, does a little showgirl
with her storytelling again. She's just making it up. I haven't seen the show, but I'm sure this is how it goes.
I don't think anyone saw that.
She's
show.
Like the one in the circus that rides the motorcycle.
Yeah, that's right. The motorcycle in the big cage.
Her sequined leotard.
Yeah.
Right. So Blansky's Beauties also starred Eddie Mecca, the guy who played Carmine Ragusa on Laverne and Shirley. And I love this so much. As Carmine's cousin.
Get the same guy.
Just say it's his cousin because they look exactly alike. How many of you look exactly like your cousin? I mean, twins don't even look exactly alike. Oh, my God. It also starred Linda Goodfriend, who would go on after this, would go on to play Richie's girlfriend, Lori Beth.
Was she still Lori Beth?
No, she was a different person.
This was before.
But Leather is still Leather.
Leather? No, Leather's not on this
Leather's
show.
Leather's not in this show.
I mean, no, not Pinky. Leather. Pinky. Pinky. Pinky is still Pinky. Yes.
Pinky is Pinky. Leather's Carmine is his cousin. And
Lori Beth is not Lori Beth.
No.
Okay.
But it gets better. There's one more character that was on Blansky's Beauties. A young, smart-alecky kid who likes to ogle the girls, played by Scott Baio.
I was just about to say Scott Baio.
Yes. You're not kidding. Chachi.
But wait, what year was this?
1976.
Oh, so it was a year. Oh, sorry.
It's
it was a year
right before. So this must have been like his audition for being Chachi. Yeah, because
well,
he
now
has
I
like.
Have to go search for
he
it.
Has a little catchphrase and everything. And of course, I can't remember what it is. It's like wah, wah, wah. But it may not. I don't know. Maybe it is wah, wah, wah. But he becomes kind of the star of the show. And then they're like, well, this didn't work. Let's just put him on Happy Days.
Oh, that's interesting.
Lasted only 13 episodes. Maybe because Pinky was supposed to be 20 years older, but she looked exactly the same as when she was in the three episodes on Happy Days, including the same outfit. She's wearing the same outfit.
Oh, well, yeah.
Does she ever talk about Fonzie in any of the episodes?
I don't think so. That's a good question. But I don't think so. I think it's just sort of like erase the past, but my name is Pinky Tuscadero.
It's that Chuck Cunningham syndrome. They just
does she do
yes,
that?
Some of this yes, stuff never happened.
The snaps?
I don't recall the snaps, but you know what? I did not rewatch it, and I'm remembering this from watching it in 1976, so
my memory
might not be up to par.
I know where I lived in 1976.
So after after she gets booted and after Blansky's Beauties tanks, she guest stars on all of the shows. Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Charlie's Angels, all of the shows. She does a few slasher films in the early 80s, and then she's gone. She's just gone. And current day Roz Kelly, honestly, I don't even really want to go there because it's like jail, guns, assaulting someone with her cane.
Sorry.
I'm not even kidding.
And I just can see that. And all of it with like a cigarette hanging out of the corner of her mouth. She's like that old woman on the Hallmark cards.
Yes, with a curly in her hair.
That's right. Do you know who I am? I'm Pinky Tuscadero.
And she's still wearing the little top
here.
Tied around
she's got
her,
the
tied
boots
up
on.
Under her boobs and the tiny shorts.
With her cane and her boots.
We're sorry.
This mean.
We can't be mean.
We are not mean people.
No.
But come on.
We don't know her.
We don't know her.
You don't attack someone with a cane. I don't care.
Okay, so let's revisit this episode and see what actually happened to capture our hearts and minds so fully.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, a rock, we're going to rock around the clock.
In the very first scene of Fonzie Loves Pinky, we are in the Cunninghams' living room, and Richie is practicing to be named the student announcer on WZAZ-TV's coverage of the upcoming Demolition Derby sponsored by the Leopard Lodge. And Howard comes in from his Leopard Lodge meeting with a very special announcement. The Derby would include an appearance by the world's greatest female cyclist, Pinky Tuscadero.
World's greatest.
The world's greatest.
Not Milwaukee's, not Wisconsin's own.
No.
World's greatest, everyone.
And this is where it's established that they all know exactly who Pinky Tuscadero is. They're like, Pinky Tuscadero, even Marion. It's so exciting. She keeps talking. She keeps like doing this and going vroom, vroom with her hands.
Yeah.
And this is where, here's a big argument that Mike and I have, because I say that Marion keeps pretending to do Papa Wheelies. And Mike's like, you don't do a Papa Wheelie. You pop a wheelie. I'm like, no, she's doing a Papa Wheelie.
Well, she called it a Papa Wheelie. She said she calls it Papa Wheelie like a nap.
I just can't wait to see her do those Papa Wheelies and those wild jumps.
She does the Papa Wheelie. Exactly. Maybe this is where I got it.
She says it like that, but I still don't think that's correct. And that's just like,
oh, I don't think it's correct either. Yeah. I think that's us supposedly thinking
that
she's a little ditzy.
The correct term is that she pops a wheelie, but it's Marion being kind of ditzy.
Right.
Yeah.
You guys, this is a life moment for me, because I think what we're discovering is the genesis of me saying Papa Wheelie.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
And I am so excited. I have to go right now and call Mike.
hold on, everyone.
Hold on.
Go get a snack.
Just hold on. Marion is the one who's probably the most excited, which is really funny. And remember, this is also the era of Evel Knievel. So there was lots of like motorcycle jumping stuff like that in the mid-70s. We really like the 50s and jumping stuff with motorcycles. So next we have Fonzie's garage. Enter the Pinkettes. And we don't know, like, are the Pinkettes, we don't know if they're like backup singers or are they mechanics? Are they just,
well, they're wearing mechanics. They're wearing jumpsuits.
They are. Like they're wearing jumpsuits. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Are they just her handlers? Are they just in charge of her motorcycle? We're not exactly sure.
They're just like her fly girls. They're her.
Yes.
They're like what Carolyn and I are going to be when you go on your book tour.
Right.
You're going to be Pinky and we're going to be your Pinkettes.
You guys are my Pinkettes.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm going
to
get
you shirts. They're just there to like boost her up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In my mind, they were always backup singers, and I just never put together the fact that they didn't sing anything. Nobody was singing, but they were backup singers. Okay, so the Pinkettes come in with Pinky's pink motorcycle, and they are getting us ready for our first glimpse of Pinky Tuscadero. The boots, the snapping, and we see her only from the back, and she says to Fonzie, kind of hoping you'd check out my sickle.
Put a piece of notebook paper in between there first, Fonzie.
Keeping it clean. Keeping it clean. The sickle. And now I remember calling things sickle.
Really?
Yes, we did. And you don't even, but you don't say motorcycle. You say motorcycle.
And a sickle, isn't that a thing that kills people?
Yeah, it like cuts wheat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can cut someone's head off. I think they
wow, feel like, yeah, I feel there. Like the Grim Reaper carries one or something.
Yeah.
And she is stunning. And that is when we see that smile. Fonzie looks up. Oh my God.
Yes.
It is the most, I mean, even if you didn't have a crush on Fonzie, you guys, I'm going to admit, I think I got a little crush on Fonzie in my rewatch. My 54-year-old self was like, oh my God, Fonzie, I think I love you.
Me His too. Smile looks like that album cover you showed us last week.
Right, that's what I was going to say. It's full on, yes.
I want that Fonzie to love me.
Me too.
Okay, so what follows after the beautiful smile from Arthur Fonzarelli is a musical montage, just like a made-for-TV movie. The musical montage is all we need to establish that Pinky and Fonzie have rekindled their romance, and they are madly in love. Madly in love. And it is so long. This musical montage goes on forever.
so long, and it's the superimposed giant faces of them with like their goofy smiles over their very obvious stunt doubles doing the Papa Wheelies, Kristen,
so
and
Papa
the jumps,
wheelies.
And they keep using that same footage
they just
of those stunt doodles
in
stunt
the same
doodles,
montage.
Stunt doubles, the wheelies and the jumps over and over, and it's so super cheesy. And the music is the Happy Days theme song, but it's played real. You know how in the Brady Bunch theme song, when it's like something sad or serious, it's like dun 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 dun. This time it's the Happy Days, and it's like dun 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 dun. And it's so slow and it's so cheesy and it's absolutely fantastic.
It is. And it really does establish their relationship. It's just how they did that, I have no idea. Because by the end of the musical montage, you're like, well, I hope they get married.
Right. Right. That's a great device. It almost would be nice as writers to be able to have something like that. Like, can I give the whole backstory of all these people? And, yes. Like this 2-minute thing.
But the whole backstory is like, we jump together. We have right. wheelies together. And that's it. And we're supposed to believe. And then we smile at each other huge. And it's like, it's the face so big that you can't even see their hair.
Yes,
it's like
right.
just
the whole
their
screen.
Face.
The whole
superimposed,
TV screen.
Almost like the Olin Mills, like the JCPenney Olin Mills, like where it's one person up looking off in the distance. And it's, but all they do, it's not like then we see them holding hands or having a picnic lunch and like, you know, walking on the beach or, no, it's just one at a time jumping and popping wheelies, not even together.
Not together. Fonzie jumping, then Pinky jumping. Yeah, and that's love. Somehow that
it's
equals
fantastic.
Love.
It's fantastic. I loved it.
And one thing I forgot to mention is that we somehow are made to believe, I don't even know how they did this, that we know they've had a relationship before.
Right.
And that's why when she comes in and he smiles, maybe that told us everything that we needed to know, that these people have been doing it before in the before times. And now she's Wait. Coming back.
Now we can chop this out if it doesn't make sense, but I'm just thinking here. Do we know where, did Fonzie's mom raise him? Or was he ever in an orphanage or anything?
Yeah,
I'm wondering.
He was in an orphanage, wasn't he?
He's an what if he was at the convent?
I read it in WikiFan. I don't remember.
But what
right
if
now.
He was, because you know, Pinky was raised in the convent because her mom dropped her off.
True. Oh.
And what if it was the same convent where Fonzie was and they were like, you know, maybe were
teen
boyfriend
lovers?
Whatever. Yeah, teen lovers or just kind
they
of
were
together.
Lovers.
And then remember, she left when she was 18 because she was ready to go off.
Carolyn, you have such a gift. I'm serious. It's on fire today. Your storytelling gift is
this
on fire.
This all would have
today.
Come out if she had not been such a bitch and stayed on. This
right?
would have all been parts of the... They would have gone to the convent together for like a fundraiser of motorcycle jumping.
For the former orphans.
Right.
They would have adopted orphans.
Oh, they totally would have adopted an orphan from their previous convent orphanage.
Oh my God.
Yes. Okay, so our next scene is at Arnold's. Thank God. And Pinky is sitting in the booth with the Cunninghams while they fawn over her, because, of course, she's the world's best female motorcyclist.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and they cannot wait to have her over for dinner and watch her famous motorcycle routine at the Derby. And then Fonzie emerges from the bathroom where he has learned some bad news. His Derby partner, because, of course, Fonzie is going to be in the Leopard right. Lodge Demolition Derby. His Derby partner, Nookie Newman, mm-hmm. has broken his leg.
It's my second cousin.
Yeah, Michelle's cousin, Nookie.
I almost named my daughter that.
Nookie Newman.
Just kidding.
So he's broken his leg. He has to drop out. And they're like, oh, no. But Pinky's like, hey, no big whoop. I'll take his place. I'm a demolition derby driver. And Fonzie rejects that idea as ridiculous because women don't belong in demolition derbies. And instead, Fonzie chooses Ralph Melph, who is a scaredy cat and doesn't even want to do it. And Pinky storms out of Arnold's. She says, Pinkettes!
Oh,
and then
I love
they
it.
Leave.
Oh, I love it. They scramble. They're at the table.
They
they're
totally
at the booth.
Do.
And they're like, oh, see, that'll be us on your book tour one day.
Yes.
You're going to have like something. And Carolyn and I are going to be like busy fussing with something, like putting all the books back in the bags. And you're going to be like, Pinkettes! And we're going to be like, wah! And we're going to like throw everything in the air and be like, go, 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 follow her.
Totally.
Carolyn, let's get ties to wear around our neck.
You
like
need a little
the,
pink
the scarves,
yeah.
Yeah.
My pink
oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, we are being shown here as young women, pre-women as we were, that Fonzie's kind of sexist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just overtly sexist. This is no place for girls. Girls don't get to be in the Demolition Derby, despite the fact that Pinky is an accomplished Demolition Derby driver. But no.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt.
Yeah.
Because does he ever say that women can't be in the Demolition Derby?
Yes, he actually says.
He actually says
women that. Don't belong in Demolition Derbies. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I really got the vibe that he didn't think she would be safe and that he was just trying to keep her safe, which I think is a little different.
This is your storytelling. That's
yes, it is.
That is different. And that comes at the end.
Because earlier, Carolyn's got this whole backstory.
Okay.
Right.
Because earlier they had a conversation over breakfast. They had blueberry scones. And
I'm like my sixth grade students who would like, raise their hands proof. Like, but and what if, what if Julius Caesar really didn't, whatever. That's like what all my students would do.
Okay. And in the next scene, Carolyn, this is where, so in the next scene, she's actually having dinner with the Cunninghams and Fonzie comes over. They're in a snit now because he said, no, you can't be my Demolition Derby partner. And when Fonzie comes over, everybody makes themselves scarce because they want the two of them to talk. And so she tries to kind of sweet talk him again slash seduce him into changing his mind.
I have a real problem with this scene. And my problem is that he gets so irate. He slaps the table. He goes, I don't think you should be in the Derby. And that's that. And he slaps the table. And that's that. And he gets up and he walks away. And she does something so out of character from what we've seen so far, like the character that they've built her to be so far. Instead of challenging that and standing up for herself, especially after like his hugely sexist comment and then his anger, she turns all baby doll seductress. Like mm-hmm. she's all like, oh, but Fonzie. And she's like basically like sexing up on him. Like,
yeah.
But you wouldn't want to be without me.
Sitting on and his lap.
That is not mm-hmm. what we've seen. I know we've only now seen her for a total of 10 minutes. But in that 10 minutes, she's a strong, independent woman. And she would not put up with that. Like, she would not put up with him, especially the banging on the table and his whole, and that's that. No, and I know, and listen, everyone, I get that we're back in the 50s. That was the gender roles back then. But then don't make it lead us to believe up to that point that she's this strong, tough, independent woman.
Well, she is a strong, tough, independent woman. I'm going to argue again. She knew exactly she knew exactly what she was doing. That's why she did it, was to manipulate him. I mean, to me, she had the upper hand. Mm-hmm. And I think he's getting angry and stuff because he's realizing, oh my gosh, this woman is messing with my head. Like all of a sudden I'm having these feelings that I've never had really before for someone. Because, you know, their relationship still is, in my mind, progressing. And he's like, whoa, like he's almost stopping himself as much as anything else when he bangs on the table. I think this is, you know, we see her like, okay, if I've got to play that card, I'm going to play it because by golly, yeah. I'm going to be in that Demolition Derby and you're not going to stop me. So let's see if this works. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I see her as playing that card is so beneath her. Like I see that being that whole like seductress, like the, oh, like the baby doll, like the baby talk and the everything mm-hmm. from what I saw of her so far. I feel like that is just like, that's almost like she's selling out like herself.
Well, let's be real. That scene was likely written by men. So they're in their minds, what they think would have happened. Right. And I did see it as pure manipulation. Like I did see her as having the upper hand. This manipulation is her upper hand. And yet this is how men would think that women have the upper hand.
Yeah.
Okay. Next scene. We're moving on to Arnold's. They're still in a snit. Ralph Mouth, who I thought his last name was Mouth. Ralph Mouth runs in to share the news that the Malachi brothers have arrived. The Malachi brothers are their opponents in the Demolition Derby, and they're destroying cars in the parking lot.
Oh, no.
So by the time Fonzie arrives, Pinky is sitting in Count Malachi's lap while he is kissing her up and down her arm, which is also a very 70s thing. Mm-hmm. This is not something you see anybody do on TV anymore.
Because it's totally gross.
But when we played like boy and girl, we always kiss up and down their arm because that's what they all did. Can you remind people listening how we know that he's Count Malachi?
I don't have any idea.
His
Cost, his outfit. He looks like he's part of the Three Musketeers. He has the big hat with like the cowboy hat with like the one brim folded up with the giant feather. And he has like the big cape on.
Well, yeah, because they had just seen Three Musketeers.
It's so preposterous and ridiculous. It's hilarious.
And he talks in Three Musketeers speak.
Oh, yeah.
Like Sir Fonz. He keeps saying Sir Fonz, right? Mm-hmm. So this, of course, he boots his brother, the other Malachi, as his partner, and he says that Pinky is going to be his driving partner instead. Ooh, Fonzie does not like this. Fonzie's jealousy helps him change his mind, and he says,
"The itinerary of drivers has been changed. Pinky, you drive with me."
She's instantly like, okay.
Because she got what she wanted. She knew what she was doing, and she got what she wanted.
So after Fonz says, "Pinky, you drive with me," you get to see Fonzie and Pinky make up. And he absolutely melts with her, in contrast to his regular persona, which is that he overpowers women. And this is the first time we've seen Fonzie melt. And it's just, they dance, and he's doing that smile. There's a real passion and conflict between these two people.
Yeah, it's the classic Fonzie dance, the classic Fonzie slow dance where they just press their cheeks together side to side.
That's right. They have their cheeks together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is also noted that Pinky will now officially be the first woman driver in the Demolition Derby. Bum, bum, bum. Okay, back to Fonzie's garage. The Pinkettes have been left to guard Pinky's derby car. And the Malachis con them into leaving. Oh, no. And then they sabotage the engine with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, and the engine is, like, in parts. Like, it's not like, oh, I have to tighten a few screws or whatever. I mean, they had taken a sledgehammer and all these parts were everywhere. I just thought, that ain't happening. But it's TV.
The writers weren't mechanics. Okay, so now it's the day of the derby. And we're assuming that Fonzie and Pinky are busy at work fixing their derby cars, and the Cunninghams are getting ready in their house to go to the derby. They're like rushing around, they're trying to get out the door, and Joni comes down with a blow dryer that you would never find in the 1950s. It's like a full-on Dorothy Hamill blow dryer. It's not a hair dryer. It looks like a gun that you'd put in a holster.
It's like a Con Air.
Yeah, it's like a Con Air. It's like a Vidal Sassoon thing. And she says that Fonzie has asked her to bring the blow dryer from the 1970s to the derby in the 1950s.
And then I love that real quick before we get to the derby, Richie, of course, is still, you know, just being Richie.
And the commentator.
And Howard's like, "Richard, go to the field and sit on it." Richard, go to the field
and sit on it. So at the derby, Howard and Marion are both at the mic and they're fumbling because they're trying to stall until Fonzie arrives. So there's all this tension that is built up, like, where is he? Will he show up? What's going to happen? And like you said, Michelle, Richie is giving ongoing commentary in front of this giant camera that is about the size of like a powder room, essentially. And he's like, the camera's following around on the big wheels. Where is Fonzie? Time is running out. And then, bum-ba-da-bum, both Fonzie and Pinky come careening around the corner in their fixed derby cars. Nice try, Malachis. I mean, it's just like, here they come. So the derby is about to begin. And there are lots of shots from inside the cars as the contestants talk to one another. They've got like these little walkie-talkies and they're all like checking in with each other and stuff like that and getting ready. And Fonz says, "Pinky, where's your helmet?" And she says,
"I don't like a helmet. It's not me. You know that."
Foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That talking back and forth on the walkie-talkies was the scene where I was just supremely Manilowed. All of a sudden, I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, I remember that. It just came flooding back to me when that was happening on there. It was just, it was amazing. The feeling
when they're talking
I got
to each other inside
it.
The cars.
Yes, it was like I was the kid again watching that part. That was the first time in rewatching this episode that I felt that. Like, oh my gosh,
and
I'm
part of
a
that,
kid again.
Part of that could be because it's very sweet. I know it sounds strange. It's a demolition derby. But the talk between Pinky and Fonzie gets very, very sweet. There's lots of really cute, encouraging walkie-talkie talk between Fonz and Pink. And he's like, "Way to go, Pinky. And watch out, sweetheart." And then she'll say,
"I took the hit for you, Fonz.
Why'd you do that, Pinky?
I'd do anything for you. You know that.
Howdy, girl, Pinky. That's why I love you.
I mean, there's lovey-dovey going on during the Demolition Derby.
During the Demolition Derby, which is basically just a giant game of bumper cars.
Like, it is bumper cars.
It's the stupidest thing.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Have you ever been to a Demolition Derby?
I have. Oh, my God. It was the best day of my life.
It was one of the best days of my life, too. Yes. I had so much fun. My dad took me.
Honestly, one of the best days of your life.
In 1975.
Top 10 with my dad. It was such a great memory. And, like, there were some famous, like, Houston celebrities. Like, the quarterback for the Houston Oilers was driving one car. And then, like, some DJ and the weatherman. And, you know, you picked a car in the beginning. I'm like, the yellow Volkswagen Bug is going to win this one.
Oh.
And
you're like, the bug got crunched. No.
How?
I loved it. I loved.
It was definitely a thing in the 70s.
It was a thing.
This was a thing for sure. It's hilarious, but it is.
Well, and you can tell it's a thing. I mean, they've got cheerleaders there. Yes. They've got a snack bar.
On the Demo Derby team.
They've got the giant, like, Battle of the Network Stars cheerleaders with the giant pom-poms.
Huge pom-poms.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought you were going to say, you were like, with the giant
pom-poms. You can call whatever you want.
One by one, so the Malachis are really, they're no good. They're ne'er-do-wells also. One by one, they are using dirty tricks to eliminate all the other drivers. And then Fonzie uses the anachronistic blow dryer to foil the flower trick. And the flower trick is that the Malachis will, this is so made up. This is so Hanna-Barbera. I can't even take
so
it.
So bad.
They will drive by their opponent and they'll grab a handful of flour. Not flowers, but flour, like you're baking cookies, and they will throw it through the window.
They just keep like a pound
get in your face, and you're like, oh, I can't see. I can't see, and I'm going to lose the Demolition Derby. Uh-huh. It's so dumb. And then that makes you out because you have flour in your face. You're out.
The Malachis are like the Don Knotts and Tim Conway of the Demolition Derby.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so they use the flower trick on Fonzie, but whoa, here's the blow dryer that Joni brought, and he just goes, and he blows the flower back at Count Malachi. But hello, is he plugging it in?
That, but also let's just all take a second to go through the physics of this. If someone threw a handful of flour at you and you blew with a hairdryer, even if it was a magic hairdryer and it didn't have to be plugged in, the flour wouldn't, all of a sudden the Malachi brother that threw it, his face is just solid white.
Yes, it was reverse course.
If you blew with a hairdryer, it would just blow that flour like poof in the air. It's just so funny. I just thought I could imagine the entire team of writers.
Oh my God.
And they just started to get like drunk or something. And they're like, what is the most ridiculous thing we can do?
Let's do a blow dryer. God. I mean,
At the time, we all thought that was fantastic.
Right. Of course. But why did Henry Winkler, like when he's blowing the blow dryer, how come Fonzie didn't go, you guys, where would I have plugged this in? That didn't occur to him? I don't understand.
Let's get back to Fonzie and Pinky.
Yes.
This derby was fine. It was fun. It was fun for, the first 82 minutes. And now it's just like going on.
But
and
he
on.
Is and so we're not even during the derby.
We're not even done. There's a lot more derby.
There's a lot more coming.
Oh, but so much more.
Fonzie and Pinky in the derby, this is a derby love affair, and he is so caring. I love this version of Fonzie so much. They're like blowing kisses to each other, although she does this weird like bunny nose thing, which I think she should not have done. That was weird. And he says things like, you be careful, I want you in one piece. And then he does lots of maneuvers to protect Pinky. And he kind of, I'm watching this, you guys, and I'm like, oh my God, Fonzie is just like my husband. That's exactly what my husband would do. He would put his car in between mine and Count Malachi. I know.
I would put my car in between you and Count Malachi.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Oh my God. You're welcome.
I wouldn't because I would not be in a car to begin with.
You would not be in
I'd
a
be one of the cheerleaders over on the side shaking my pom-poms.
And really, it's Fonzie who is the caring one because Pinky is mostly going, woo! Woo!
Yeah, she's very reckless.
She's reckless. And
she's not even wearing a seatbelt.
No, God, no. Oh, my God, no.
The rest of them were.
So Fonzie sees the Malachis setting up to do the Malachi Crunch on Pinky. The Malachi Crunch is a form of double teaming, essentially. They're going to smash her in between their cars. And then, oh, no, Pinky's car is stalled. And then you're watching. You're like, wait, is she getting out of the car? No, Pinky, no. And then, of course, they do the Malachi Crunch. Pinky rolls off the hood of the car onto the ground, and everything stops. And Fonzie gets out of the car, and he runs over to Pinky, and he's cradling her on the ground.
Which you should never do, by the way. You should never pick up someone
like
that. She
could
have had a broken neck.
Yeah, don't pick up the broken person. She takes off her pink scarf, and she gives it to him for luck. And then they kiss, Romeo and Juliet style, and Pinky is whisked away to Pfister Hospital for x-rays, just in case.
Right, but I think it's funny. He's like been cradling her. And then as they take her, he's like, be careful with her. Be careful. I'm like, well.
They're acting like she's dying. When she she rolled off the hood.
I think
no one thought she was dying.
I thought she was dying for sure about Pinky.
Yes.
Yeah.
No one hit her. She just rolled off. And she's limp in his arms, like all her bones are broken. Every single one. She can't even hold up her arm. Oh, except she can take off her scarf and give it to her. And Richie's commentary even confirms that she's going to be fine.
Pinky appears to be okay, but as a precautionary measure, they're rushing her to the hospital for x-rays.
It's very noble, though.
It is very noble.
The ambulance was my favorite character.
Oh, yeah. It's like there.
Derby. Mm-hmm. I know, but it was there immediately, but oh. It's just, I know, I realize it's a 1950s ambulance, but it was just so funny. It's just like so old and long and giant. And
it's like from Laurel and Hardy.
It looks sort of like a hearse. Yeah.
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 From Laurel and Hardy, exactly.
And Richie is still commentating.
Did you see that look on Fonzie's face? Fonzie is really angry.
It's so funny. And Fonzie really is on a mission. And he gets in his car, and it's really kind of sad, actually, because he's got this sort of this combo of sadness and sorrow and vengeance. And he says to the camera, "This is for you, Pinky." And then it says on the screen, "To be continued."
Oh gosh.
Mm-hmm. And we have to wait a whole week. We have to wait a
whole
week.
Our listeners are all like, "Oh, thank God. Now we can wait till next week." Nope. We're going to keep on going.
Okay. So let's pretend it's the next Tuesday night. We waited a whole week. We talked about it all week with our friends. Mm-hmm. And now we have just Fonzie against the Malachis.
Yep.
It's two against one.
We're about to get another 86 minutes of Derby crashing.
That's right. This one's going to be a lot quicker, though, because Fonzie, he's got something up his sleeve. Because almost immediately, Fonzie's car stalls. And you're like, what? Oh, no. And he sits in the middle of the ring while the count circles him, taunting. He's so mean in his little, I was going to say Three's Company talk. That's not right. What is that show?
It's like the Three Musketeers. It's like,
same thing. It's the same. Okay, but just kidding. JK, Fonzie starts his car. It was all a ruse. And he rams Count Malachi. He was faking. Malachi gets out and he runs away and he's begging Fonzie to let up on me. He's going,
Fonz, what are you doing? The movie's over. It's not fair. I haven't got my car.
And Fonzie runs him down as he runs away and pins him in the porta potty.
That's a great scene.
Yes.
Sir Fonz. It's a total Don Knotts, Tim Conway move to have him being pinned in the porta potty.
Well, and to be chased, to have Fonzie chase down a man on foot when Fonzie is in his car. I mean,
that's kind of scary. Yeah.
That's humor. That's humor. Mm-hmm. Howard tries, so he's won. Fonzie's the big winner of the Demolition Derby, and Howard tries to give Fonzie his trophy, but Fonzie's like,
where's my lady? Where's Pinky?
She's at Pfister Hospital.
Pfister Hospital, all right.
And he hops on his motorcycle. He gets out of his car. His motorcycle is right there, and he zooms away to Pfister Hospital.
I like how it's always, you always have to make sure we all know that it's Pfister Hospital.
It's Pfister Hospital.
By the way, listeners, this podcast is brought to you today by the good people at Pfister Hospital.
In the same episode, though, they also go to Pfister's Emporium.
And okay, something was up with that. Park. Uh-huh. The Demolition Derby's at Pfister Park.
Yes.
Oh, you guys, we've got it. Yes. Carolyn, that is a good job for you. You got to figure out what is the meaning of that, right?
Well, and at the end of the show, like in the last seasons, when Fonzie is dating Linda Pearl and he's going to get married to Linda Pearl, that's Ashley Pfister.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Okay, there's a backstory.
Which is why I keep saying Pfister Hospital, because they're so overt about it. She's going to Pfister Hospital.
Going to Pfister Hospital.
I think most of the, in most shows, they'd be like, she's going to the hospital.
Well, and you know what? I stayed in the Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee. I did.
So. Oh my God.
Yes. This is a nod to Milwaukee. Okay. People from Milwaukee, start DMing us right now because we did not do this research.
I'm looking.
She's researching on the fly.
On the fly. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is important to me, but I am still present listening. Yeah.
Kristen's going to continue. We're at the hospital
so
now.
We're at the hospital. And Fonzie tells Richie he's about to do something very uncool. He wants to ask Pinky to marry him. And he says, it's super cute. He's like, I got these feelings. And Richie says, you love her. And he says, I love her? Yeah, I love her. Allows himself to start fantasizing.
I'm going to buy her a little house, you know, and we'll have a little picket fence, you know, and I'll buy her a little dog because I love dogs.
Oh, I didn't know you liked doggies. I said dog. Fonz with a dog.
Yeah.
What would you name a dog, Fonz?
I don't know. Spunky.
A dog, not a doggy.
Right, not a doggy. Yeah.
He can have a dog, but not a dog.
A dog. Doggies are not cool, but dogs are cool. And this is when a nun rolls Pinky down the hall in a wheelchair, and she has like a pink sweatband on her head, Bjorn Borg style, which is supposed to be some kind of Band-Aid.
Is she supposed to have had a head injury under all that hair? And they just put, you know what she looks like? She looks exactly like Stephanie, oh my God, in Heart to Heart.
Yeah, Stephanie Powers.
Stephanie Powers, yes. Mm-hmm. But she, it's like barely even just sitting on top of her hair.
Because they don't want to smash her hair down. It's not even touching.
It's not even touching the bleeding of anything. Also, we saw her fall from that car. She has no head injury.
No.
But I just thought it was so funny that they just put like the pink headband down on her hair.
It's more like a ribbage than a bandage. And of course, as we've said, it's pink. She's like, no, get me a pink one. Everything I have is pink. Yeah, it's just barely touching. It's not touching any skin. It's just sitting on top of her head like Bjorn Borg. And again, what is she bandaging? Because nothing happened to her. And right there in the hospital, Fonzie proposes to Pinky.
Pinky, you know, I mean, we've been together now. We're getting along pretty good, huh?
Better than pretty good.
Yeah. That's what I think. So that brings me to my next point, you know. Let's do it.
Over my dead body.
And I'm sure as a kid, I had no idea what she was.
No, but it was, I thought it was pretty funny. And they both laugh. Actually, it almost looks like if you watch it again, it almost looks like they break character a little bit when she says it, because they laugh and it's almost like a genuine laugh. I thought that was really funny.
Yes. And she says,
how am I going to learn how to spell Fonzarelli?
Well, you learned how to spell Tuscadero, didn't you?
Cute. So it's all good.
Yeah.
It's
when we were together in the convent, remember when you learned how to spell?
Remember when we were orphanage team members in the orphanage together? This is our destiny. Okay, so everything's good. Her head injury, I'm sure, is all healed by now.
Yeah, it's gone.
Time has passed, and we're at the Cunninghams' house, and Fonzie arrives with a very official-looking briefcase because he is now president of Pinky Incorporated. Not only will she not stop driving like he was fantasizing about in the hospital, but she has been invited to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show with her sickle. And Fonzie is going to go with her and support her career. And he says to Richie, I'm going to have to wear a tie. And Richie kind of sees that this is a little bit of a worry. He's got a little anxiety about this. And Richie says, are you sure you want to go on the road with Pinky? Because I'm going to miss you.
Same.
I know. Okay, you guys, did we really think Fonzie was going to leave the show?
Yes, for sure. I think he's leaving the show. However, now watching it back, I was sort of like, of course, because now I'm like seeing all the holes and the inconsistencies in this. I'm like, wait, this is kind of a 180 from what we've just seen in the first part of the episode, right? Like now he's like going to just carry the briefcase and go support her career. Like there's no reason he couldn't do that and still be Fonzie. But now he's like, well, no, I'm going to wear a tie and be a businessman now. But yeah, I think that as a little girl, of course you do.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you think he's going to leave.
I can't imagine. I mean, this show would have been over for me if there was no Fonzie. I don't remember what I thought, but in that moment, it sounds as if Fonzie is leaving Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
So then the Pinkettes arrive at the Cunningham's house, and they give Fonzie his first paycheck from Pinky Incorporated. And they say, don't you worry, she'll take care of you. And Fonzie doesn't like this.
Yeah, it's a little too emasculating.
It was very emasculating, and his ego is showing. And he says, she paid me like an employee.
That was the straw. That's the proverbial straw, that check.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, that's when he's like, yeah, no, this isn't going to work for me.
Right. And so then we go to Arnold's for their engagement party, having just come from that conversation where he says, she paid me like an employee. And Fonz asks to speak to Pinky alone. So they clear out Arnold's. Everybody leave. Everybody leave the engagement party. I have to talk to Pinky. And he says to her, I can't be Mr. Tuscadero. And she says, but I can't do it without you. I'll stay here with you. And he says, no, you can't give it up. Maybe we'll get back together again someday.
Oh, there's Carolyn's story. Leaving it open. There's Carolyn's story of what that they intended. Was she only going to be on for 3 episodes? Mm-hmm. And Carolyn said, I thought maybe, you know, they were going to leave it open. But yeah, that's a good, that's, you guys, I thought that was so sweet. Like, it was such a classy breakup. But at the same time, it was all very abrupt. Like, they both were suddenly very okay with it. But at the same time, you love to see that, right? Like, it's so unrealistic. But I was really, like, happy with how, like, big they were. Both were.
Yeah.
Again, when I was 7 years old, I had no clue. You probably just were like, "Oh, they're breaking up." But like now, as an adult, we're I like how we study these shows now.
I know. Like, 30 minutes ago, they were madly in love. Now they're breaking up at their engagement party.
Yeah, they're just like, "Okay, all right, I'll miss you. I'll miss you too."
Right. But at the same time, so it all happened very sweetly. But why did it happen? Again, because he's a chauvinist. And he doesn't want to be Mr. Tuscadero.
I know.
He doesn't want to support her career, even though at least he's moved in the needle enough to be able to say, no, this is important for you. You need to go and race your motorcycle. But he can't get his ego out of the way to be with her. Okay, so they let the others in. They've broken up, right? And they don't tell everybody that they've just broken up. They just let the engagement party ensue. And a photographer asks for a picture of Mr. Tuscadero. And Pinky says,
that is not Mr. Tuscadero. That's the Fonz.
Yeah. And you guys, I swear to God, when I typed that, I got goosebumps. That's the Fonz.
Well, fun fact, if you guys remember in our episode last week, I talked about Jerry Paris being a director of a lot of the episodes. And he was Jerry Helper, Dick Van Dyke's next door neighbor. On the Dick Van Dyke Show, and he was the photographer in this episode of Happy Days.
I didn't even notice
cameo,
that. I'll have to go back and watch
cameo,
that.
Asking for a picture of Mr. Tuscadero. After the party is over, we have the ending musical montage. It is the exact same footage from the beginning of the show with Pinky and Fonzie doing Papa Wheelies and smiling really big on the screen. But this time, it's not a falling in love montage. It's a goodbye to love montage.
It's goodbye to love. I feel like in this time at the end, though, at least they showed them riding their motorcycles together holding hands. In
this one,
at the very end of it.
Okay,
yeah, but it was all the same. It was all the same Papa Wheelies and jumps with the stunt doubles that are so clearly not them.
Yes. And it's the same Sunday, Monday, happiness. And then she puts on her pink helmet. He gives her a thumbs up. And she zooms away with the Pinkettes on her heels. And Fonzie rides away into the sunset with Richie. And he says, don't worry about me. I have a date with the Pulaski twins tonight. And boom, the old Fonzie is back.
Yeah, that was a little abrupt. I feel like they could have let him respect his relationship with Pinky a little bit more.
Yes.
That was a little gross to me. Like, just give it another week.
Right. Let us sit with this for a bit.
He didn't like when he would feel vulnerable and emotional. He quickly wanted to get out of those moments.
Yeah.
Like, so I think that's why he said it. He didn't want to be sad about Pinky. He's like, I'm okay. I'm going to be cool, Fonzie, like you had said before, Michelle. And I'm already back. Like, look at me. It didn't really faze me. It really did faze him, but he doesn't want to show us that. So he's moved on to the Pulaski twins, but he'll never be over Pinky.
So he's really quipping is what he's doing.
Oh,
he's
definitely.
Deflecting. He's deflecting.
Oh, he deflects in a lot of this episode.
That's not a tear. That's not a tear.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
going out with the Pulaski twins tonight.
Fonzie needs a therapist.
So, yeah, he definitely does need a therapist. So at the end of this, I don't know. I just felt like it was breaking all the rules of storytelling because he breaks up with her. It feels like in order for us to have sympathy for him, she should have broken up with him and then be like, oh, no, Fonzie. But no, he broke up with Pinky. And then it's because he doesn't want to be second banana and she's fine with it. It's just sort of a continuation of the chauvinism that he showed in the beginning when he didn't want her to drive with him. And isn't he supposed to show some kind of growth at the end, like some sort of movement? Isn't that what storytelling is all about? But instead, he's just doing the same exact thing as he did in the beginning. I don't know. I struggled with that.
I don't agree, Kristen. Okay. Sorry. You know, I go a little bit deeper. Because you remember when he is saying, like, that he doesn't want to go on the road and all that. I mean, she says, okay, I won't go. Like, mm-hmm. she offers to stay with him. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want her to give that up. So I think he has to say, it has to be on his terms, because she might give it all up. And he knows that really she can't. So mm-hmm. I honestly think he's doing it preemptively so that she doesn't, you know, say, oh, it's okay, and beg him to stay, because that's what brings her joy. And he wants her to be happy. Mm-hmm. And he's going to let her have that experience. So I don't think he did it to be a jerk.
I don't think he did it to be a jerk. I think that could be an example of his growth, is that he's prioritizing her aspirations, but he can't get over his own ego in order to support her aspirations.
Well, I don't feel like he had the same chauvinism that he had at the beginning. Like, I do think there was growth, because I think by the end, he was willing to see her as her own person and as a success and not just as his stereotypical wife, but being her employee and being kept by her and catering to her wasn't who he truly was. So he was able to honor who she was, respect who she was, but he had to honor who he was too, truthfully. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I feel like he did grow, but, you know, maybe like 75-80%. And I also think that the writers, they probably had to do a really fast pivot when they realized Pinky wasn't going to work out.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
they're
yes,
like,
they
abort,
probably
abort
did
the
throw
mission.
Up this
abort
all together.
Mission.
But I don't think he reverted back to how he was at the beginning. I think he was able to see her
you guys,
as
I'm like,
a success.
I'm trying so hard not to laugh right now. I'm like holding it in because we are sitting here having book club about Fonzie and Pinky like it's Pride and Prejudice.
We truly are. It's very important to us. We have very important points, Kristen.
That's right. I don't want anyone to think he's a male chauvinist. I think he really has evolved.
It is true. You know what? And I hope our listeners, and I know most of our listeners do, get it. And I think they are probably, hopefully you guys listening, are feeling as impassioned about this very important matter and discussion of if Fonzie showed growth or not.
And provide examples.
Yes.
That's right.
You can write
respect the woman.
In a supporting sentence. Oh my goodness. You guys, this concludes our marathon coverage of the 1970s most iconic sitcom, Happy Days. Thanks for hanging out with us for 2 straight weeks as we picked apart every ounce of this long-lived piece of our childhood, from Lori Beth to Leather and Potsy to Pinky. It caught us when we really needed to be distracted from the news, much like today, and it swept us up in an era that looked like a really fun time to be a teenager, which is why we all showed up every Tuesday night. So I will leave you with these wise words we heard every week all those years ago. Goodbye, gray sky. Hello, blue. Nothing can hold me when I hold you. Feels so right. Can't be wrong. A rockin' and rollin' all week long. Thank you for listening, everybody, and have a great week.
Yes, and join us next week when we'll be rockin' and rollin' about more nostalgic topics.
You guys know what makes me so happy?
What?
That every single week, our listener numbers grow. Like, our little line graph is just climbing up up like that little yodeler mountain climber on The Price is Right. It just keeps going up. And that is thanks to all of you who listen and who share our podcast with others and who take a minute or less to click the stars where you listen and write a nice review. And this week we are giving a very special birthday shout out to patron and all around wonderful PCPS supporter, Gail, who is having a birthday on Wednesday. Thanks to the little birdie who told us about that. Gail, we hope your birthday is the grooviest and that your coming year is as wonderful as a Dr. Pepper lip smacker and as exciting as a day at the roller rink where they do not do couple skate. Happy birthday, Gail. And shout outs are also going out to our newest supporters on Patreon, Amy, Megan, Melanie, Kristen, Julie, and Linda. Thank you all so, so much. And if you're interested in checking out our Patreon page, just go to patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. .com and put our name up in the search bar, or you'll find clickable links all over the place on her Instagram link tree, in these show notes, and at our website.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie. Cheers.
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 The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.